Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you, wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. You know, when we learn about genetics in school, we're generally taught that mutations are these, like, tiny incremental typos in our DNA.
Right, yeah, the classic view of evolution really leans into that idea. You know, yeah. It paints this picture of a process that is just slow, steady, and totally reliant on these small point mutations accumulating over vast stretches of time.
Exactly. A single letter changes, a protein shifts slightly, and evolution just sort of crawls forward. It's a game of microscopic adjustments. But what if we completely throw that idea out the window?
Well, that's where things get wild.
Right. Think about what really happens when an organism simply duplicates its entire genetic library all at once. We're talking about a massive macro mutation, a genome doubling event known as polyploidization.
It's basically a total chromosomal overload.
Yeah. And imagine a world where this biological glitch, this overload, actually holds the key to engineering climate-resilient crops, cleaning up radioactive uranium spills, and even explaining why some of the most aggressive cancers resist our best therapies. How could this change our transition to a sustainable, bio-based future?
It's a question that, frankly, completely reorients how we view genetic anomalies. Instead of seeing a double genome as an error that needs to be fixed, I mean, we really have to start looking at it as a radical evolutionary shortcut.
And exploring the mechanics of that exact shortcut is what our deep dive is all about today. Today, we celebrate the work of Marlies Peters and Yves Van de Peer from Ghent University and the VIB Center for Plant Systems Biology, who have advanced our understanding of polyploidy's incredible potential across the modern bioeconomy.
Yeah, and to really grasp the magnitude of their work, we need to look at the global context driving this research. We are currently in the midst of a massive, super necessary transition.
Right, getting away from fossil fuels.
Exactly. Initiatives like the 2015 European Green Deal laid out a really clear mandate to move away from fossil-based industries toward a bioeconomy.
Mm-hmm.
We're actively trying to use biological resources to address, you know, climate change, massive pollution, severe food shortages.
Okay, let's unpack this. We want to use biology to save the planet. And to do that, scientists are focusing heavily on whole genome duplication, or WGD. But researchers have studied WGD for over 100 years, right?
They have, yeah.
And historically, it was viewed as a detrimental, highly destructive event because it causes intense genomic instability. I mean, if a cell is a highly organized factory, duplicating every single machine, blueprint, and manager simultaneously sounds like a recipe for total chaos. Why does this chaos actually lead to survival instead of total factory collapse?
That is basically the ultimate biological paradox. Instantly doubling the genetic material is absolutely chaotic.
It has to be.
Yeah. In a normal diploid organism, meaning an organism with two sets of chromosomes like you and me, the cell division process is finely tuned. Throwing in extra sets just disrupts that machinery.
Right.
But if you look back through the evolutionary record, ancient whole genome duplication events actually coincide perfectly with the origin of major evolutionary lineages.
Wait, really? Like which ones?
Well, the ancestors of all vertebrates, modern fishes, and all flowering plants trace back to these ancient WGD events. And what's really fascinating is those ancient genome doubling events correlate with periods of severe global climate change and mass extinction.
Oh, wow. So when the world is effectively ending, the organisms that manage to survive are the ones that accidentally doubled their entire genetic factory.
Precisely. That initial chaos in the factory actually provides a massive surplus of spare parts. If you have two copies of every single gene, one copy can keep the essential factory operations running normally.
Right, doing the day-to-day stuff.
Exactly. And the second copy is entirely free. It can mutate, adapt, invent entirely new functions without killing the organism. It provides an instant massive buffer against environmental stress. And scientists today aren't just observing this. They're actively forcing this glitch in the lab to build a better bioeconomy.
Which brings us to the actual mechanics. How are scientists actively forcing an entire genome to double on command?
Well, it helps to understand that polyploidy exists on a continuum. At one end, you have autopolyploids.
Mm-hmm.
That's when an organism simply doubles its own existing genome.
Okay.
At the other extreme, you have allopolyploids. That happens when two entirely different species hybridize first and then that hybrid genome doubles.
Like a mashup that then gets cloned.
Yeah, exactly. And to induce this, scientists use a few different methods. One common one is chemical induction, using a compound called colchicine. Colchicine basically paralyzes the cell's division machinery.
So it freezes it?
Kinda, yeah. The cell prepares to divide, it copies all its DNA, but the colchicine physically prevents the cell from splitting into two.
Ah, so the effect wears off and you're left with a single cell that is suddenly hoarding double the genetic material.
That's the exact mechanism. Now, in aquaculture, they achieve a similar result using physical shocks. They'll apply a sudden thermal shock or a high pressure shock to fish eggs right after fertilization.
Just to disrupt that initial cell division.
Yep, exactly. But perhaps the most advanced technique we use today, specifically in agriculture, is called doubled haploid, or DH, breeding.
Oh, let's focus on this one, because the mechanics here are just fascinating. Normally, a haploid cell, like a grain of pollen or an unfertilized egg, only has half the genetic material.
Right.
In DH breeding, scientists take that haploid cell and artificially double its genome. To me, it's like taking a half-finished, totally asymmetrical jigsaw puzzle, perfectly mirroring it, and instantly getting a complete symmetrical picture. You get the exact genetic traits you want completely locked in a single generation.
It's incredibly efficient. It completely circumvents the decades of traditional breeding and backcrossing that it usually takes to stabilize a new crop variety. We're already using this heavily in major crops like maize, barley, and wheat, and we're exploring it for essential slow breeding crops like cassava.
Wait, but if you're perfectly duplicating half a genome to make a whole one, aren't you also perfectly duplicating any hidden genetic defects? How do scientists get around the fact that fixing a genome so quickly locks in bad recessive traits? Doesn't that trigger a massive genetic load that just ruins the plant?
It absolutely can. Well, that is a critical limitation of the method. If you use DH breeding on a plant with a high genetic load, meaning it has a lot of hidden detrimental mutations, duplicating those mutations will immediately expose them.
Because there's no healthy dominant gene to hide behind anymore.
Exactly. The resulting plant might be completely sterile or non-viable. It's incredibly tricky to manage. But when the method works, the phenotypic results are explosive.
Like visibly obvious changes.
Oh yeah. The sudden changes in the organism's size, its resilience, its chemical output, it's just staggering. We can see these explosive results across the four main colors of the global bioeconomy.
Okay, let's dive into those, starting with the green bioeconomy.
Right, which covers agriculture and terrestrial plants. And one of the most immediate visible effects of genome doubling in plants is something called the Gigas effect.
Gigas meaning gigantic, right?
Exactly. When you double the amount of DNA in a cell, the nucleus physically has to expand to hold it all. To maintain the proper biological ratio between the nucleus and the rest of the cell, the entire cell grows larger.
So bigger cells mean a bigger plant?
Basically, yes. This translates to massive increases in overall plant organ size.
The real-world application of this is incredible. The deep dive highlights the triploid Ethiopian banana insect ventricosum. By having three sets of chromosomes instead of the standard two, this crop experiences the Gigas effect and produces massively enlarged pseudostomes.
And that's the part they eat.
Right. This specific polyploid glitch is currently a primary food source feeding over 20 million people because it completely outyields its diploid ancestors.
It's a lifesaver. But the benefits in the green bioeconomy extend far beyond just food. Take renewable energy and biofuels.
Oh, this was a huge point.
Yeah. First generation biofuels relied heavily on starch, which directly competed with the human food supply. We really need to transition to second generation biofuels, which use agricultural waste and plant stems, known as lignocellulose.
But breaking down rigid plant cell walls to extract that energy is notoriously difficult, isn't it?
It is. It's highly energy intensive.
Sure.
But genome doubling actually solves this mechanically. The sources note that straw from a newly developed tetraploid potato plant yields incredibly high amounts of bioethanol.
Just because the cells are bigger.
Exactly. Because the individual cells are much larger due to the Gigas effect, the overall surface area of the cell wall compared to the volume inside is significantly reduced. It requires only a mild pretreatment to process it.
That's amazing. So you get food from the potato itself and highly efficient, sustainable fuel from oversized waste cells.
It's a win-win. We also see major mechanistic advantages in plant-derived medicines. When you increase the genetic content, you're essentially duplicating the biological blueprints. More blueprints mean the cell manufactures way more metabolic enzymes,
which churn out massive amounts of chemical compounds.
Precisely.
Yeah.
For example, researchers chemically induced autotetraploidy in a medicinal plant called Mexican anise. The resulting doubled plant produced significantly higher levels of tilianin, which is a highly valuable cardiovascular therapeutic.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If polyploid crops give us bigger yields, easier to process biofuels, highly concentrated medicines, and incredible tolerance to heat and drought, which the sources note with specific heat-tolerant asparagus and salt-tolerant rice, why aren't all of our new crops registered this way? Why isn't every single breeder forcing these WGD events?
Well, it comes down to our regulatory frameworks, honestly. To register a new crop variety, it has to pass the DUS criteria. It must be distinct, uniform, and stable.
Distinct, uniform, and stable.
Right. And this agricultural system was designed decades ago for traditional, genetically simple crops. Polyploids are, by their very nature, genetically complex and naturally variable.
Because of all those extra spare parts in their factory.
Exactly. Their gene expression is constantly shifting to adapt to the environment. Our current registration systems unfairly penalize these highly climate-resilient crops simply because they don't look perfectly aesthetically uniform in a farmer's field.
So our bureaucratic policies are actually lagging way behind our biological innovations.
It's a massive bottleneck right now. But, you know, while agriculture struggles with those outdated regulations, the blue bioeconomy, which focuses on marine and aquatic resources, is charging ahead.
In the blue bioeconomy, we're talking mostly about fish and algae, right? In commercial aquaculture, farmers are actively creating triploid fish, specifically salmon and rainbow trout. But unlike the Ethiopian banana, where the goal is a much bigger harvest, the goal with triploid fish is absolute sterility.
Yeah, and the mechanism behind this sterility is just fascinating. Meiosis is the cell division process that creates sperm and eggs, and it requires chromosomes to pair up evenly.
Right, one from each parent.
But because triploid fish have three sets of chromosomes, that pairing process completely fails. You can't divide 3x2 evenly. The cellular machinery just stalls out. Consequently, these fish never develop functional gonads.
Which sounds like a huge detriment, but it's actually a massive advantage for aquaculture for two specific reasons. First, fish expend immense amounts of metabolic energy trying to reproduce. Because triploid fish cannot do this, all of that fatty acid and energy gets redirected into pure body growth.
Exactly. You get much faster growing fish with a significantly higher fillet quality.
And the second reason is ecological containment, right?
Yes, this is crucial. As we breed fish to grow faster or resist disease, the absolute last thing we want is for a farmed fish to escape and interbreed with wild populations that could devastate local ecosystems.
So making the farmed fish triploid and sterile acts as a biological lock. It entirely protects wild genetics while allowing us to sustainably farm the oceans.
It's a really elegant solution. And the blue bioeconomy isn't just fish. It applies heavily to microalgae too. The deep dive mentions a specific polyploid microalgae, Haematococcus lacustris.
All right.
By inducing polyploidy, researchers gave the algae double the genetic blueprints, which increased its production of astaxanthin by 60% at a semi-industrial scale.
And astaxanthin is an antioxidant that's, what, 50 times more efficient than vitamin E?
Something like that, yeah. We're literally turning single-celled algae into supercharged pharmaceutical factories.
But if algae can pump out antioxidants with extra chromosomes, what happens when we push this to the absolute extreme with industrial microbes? This transitions us to the white bioeconomy, which focuses entirely on using microorganisms like yeast and bacteria to manufacture chemicals, plastics, and energy.
Yeah, and if you thought three or four sets of chromosomes was a heavy genetic load, the sources detail how scientists are engineering the yeast strains used for biomanufacturing into super polyploids.
The numbers here blew my mind.
Right. They've engineered yeast to carry up to 32 copies of their genome, a 32M ploidy level.
How does a single microscopic cell even function with 32 sets of blueprints crammed into it? How does the factory not just collapse from overcrowding?
Well, it survives because industrial fermentation is an incredibly harsh environment. The vats are boiling hot, the alcohol levels become toxic, and the sheer metabolic stress would absolutely obliterate a normal diploid yeast cell.
Ah, so the stress is actually necessary.
Exactly. By packing the cell with 32 redundant copies of his genome, you give it 32 chances to have a mutated enzyme that suddenly tolerates high heat or alcohol. It gains extreme stress tolerance, surviving the toxic byproducts of its own massive production.
And they are applying this exact same logic for bioremediation, using microbes to clean up environmental disasters.
Yes, they are.
The deep dive highlighted a polyploid bacteria called Deinococcus radiodurans, which is actively used to clean up radioactive uranium spill.
Which is just incredible.
Right. There's also evidence of polyploid Pseudomonas bacteria surviving in freezing seawater while physically breaking down and removing crude oil. The extreme stress of the pollution essentially selects for these polyploid mutants because their massive duplicated genomes give them the metabolic flexibility to literally eat the toxins.
We're really seeing a universal mechanism at play here. In the green, blue, and white bioeconomies, polyploidy acts as an evolutionary shield against extreme stress. It allows plants, fish, and microbes to survive conditions that should be instantly lethal.
Right.
But when we look at the red bioeconomy, the sector focused on human health and medicine,
yeah,
that exact same evolutionary shield is a completely different story.
Yeah, let's look at the red bioeconomy, starting with how we leverage this shield for good. When pharmaceutical companies manufacture complex biologics, which are large, complex protein drugs like insulin, vaccines, or targeted antibodies, they need living host cells to produce them. And the industry standard is CHO cells, or Chinese hamster ovary cells.
Right. And to force these hamster cells to produce human medicine, we have to insert massive amounts of foreign DNA, called transgenes, into their genome. In a normal diploid cell, haphazardly inserting that much foreign DNA would disrupt essential, life-sustaining genes, immediately killing the cell.
But CHO cells naturally maintain a near polyploid karyotype. Now, karyotype just refers to the overall visual appearance and number of their chromosomes in the nucleus. They're basically hoarding extra redundant DNA.
Exactly, so they can physically buffer the toxic effects of all that transgene insertion.
The extra genomic material provides safe landing zones for the inserted DNA.
Right, the factory keeps running on its original blueprints while the extra blueprints are used to churn out life-saving medicines.
That is the immense benefit of polyploidy in medical manufacturing. But this brings us to the dark side. In human biology, polyploidy is a natural feature of some healthy tissues, like the liver, where having extra DNA aids in tissue repair and metabolic capacity. However, in the context of cancer, polyploidization is hijacked.
Yeah, and this was arguably the most chilling mechanism in the research. We're talking about PGCCs, polyploid giant cancer cells.
Historically, pathologists would examine a tumor biopsy and see these massively swollen, deformed cells with unstructured, chaotic chromatin inside the nucleus.
And because they looked so damaged, the medical community classified them as senescent, essentially non-functional dying cells that were just dead ends for the tumor.
But the research shows they aren't dead ends at all. When a patient receives chemotherapy, that is an extreme environmental stress. Some cancer cells respond to that toxic stress by doubling their genome and entering a state of cell cycle arrest.
They literally just stop dividing.
Right. And because chemotherapy drugs are explicitly designed to target and kill dividing cells, these dormant polyploid giant cells become virtually invisible to the drugs. They shut down the factory, board up the windows, and just weather the chemical storm.
And once the chemotherapy treatment ends and the environmental stress diminishes, these PGCCs do something absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, they depolyploidize.
Exactly. They shed the extra chromosomes they were hiding behind, re-enter the cell cycle, and start rapidly dividing again. This shared biological mechanism is now understood to be a primary driver of disease relapse and therapeutic resistance across multiple types of aggressive cancers.
So what does this all mean? If we look at this through the lens of our factory analogy, polyploidy is essentially the ultimate biological stress test protocol. In the green, blue, and white bioeconomies, we are intentionally exploiting this protocol. We trigger it to build stronger agricultural and industrial biofactories that can survive climate change and toxic vats. But in the red bioeconomy, the tumor is exploiting the exact same biological loophole against us to survive our chemotherapy.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is exactly the realization the researchers are urging us to make. Polyploidy is not a magic wand, you know.
Mm.
The outcomes are highly variable and can sometimes lead to sterile or non-viable organisms.
Like we saw with the genetic load in plants.
Right. But by recognizing this genome doubling as a shared fundamental mechanism, mm-hmm. we can actually bridge these isolated scientific disciplines. What plant ecologists and agricultural scientists know about managing polyploid stress tolerance could directly inform how oncologists target those dormant PGCCs to prevent cancer relapse.
Wow.
Yeah, the paper strongly advocates for a cross-disciplinary approach, taking the profound knowledge from the green, blue, and white bioeconomies and directly applying it to the red.
We're looking at a shared macromutational force that literally reshapes genomes overnight. Whether it's creating climate-resilient crops that feed millions, engineering sustainable biofuels, creating sterile fish for safer aquaculture, or manufacturing complex biopharmaceuticals, genome doubling offers a rapid evolutionary shortcut.
It really does. By expanding an organism's genetic and metabolic capacity, polyploidization unlocks vast bioeconomic opportunities to build stress resilience across all domains of life.
It forces us to reconsider what we view as a genetic error versus an evolutionary adaptation. The genomic chaos we once thought was purely detrimental is actually the very engine of rapid innovation and survival.
It's wild to think about.
What does this mean for our definition of a normal genome when the key to surviving our rapidly changing world might just be embracing the ultimate biological mutants among us?
It's a profound concept, honestly.
Yeah.
It challenges the very foundation of how we approach genetics, medicine, and our entire future on this planet.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. In the lab glow, we tilt the dice of life. One more whole blueprint stitched into the drive. Cells get wide like a sunrise in the grain. A giant kind of ordinary, rewriting what we tame. Copies of the code singing out of time. Switching on new colors in the metabolic line. But every bright expansion has a shadow on the floor. So we measure, we listen, we asked for something more. Double the light, let it grow. Stock stood, algae turning sunlight into medicine.